Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. We will be joined tonight by Don Siegelman. We got our times confused yesterday. He is in Central Time. We're in Eastern Time. Yada, yada. He'll join us in about an hour. And we will talk about what has happened to him as a result of being targeted by Karl Rove. Remember when the Republicans were just all a flutter and highly pissed off when the Homeland Security report warned us about right-wing terrorists? Remember that? Huh? What have we had now in 9 days? 2 killing attacks by right-wing crazy people in this country. Right-wing terrorists. I doubt if there will be any rush to apologize to Secretary Janet Napolitano. But as our military affairs correspondent writes, Sharon writes, you can't convince me that all the melodramatic talk about President Obama by Republicans and talk show hosts, talk of his socialism and his discrimination against white men and his weakened national security and he's not a citizen and where's his birth certificate, all this garbage isn't having an effect on these right-wing crazies. 2 words, Sharon writes, Timothy McVeigh. It is having an effect. And It's more than having an effect. The crazy right-wing talk that blankets this country every day without let-up, starting at 6 in the morning and usually going until at least 7 o'clock at night, and then some of it is repeated in reruns. This craziness that you hear coast to coast, border to border, is one of the major factors in the insanity that we're facing right now, in these hate crimes, in the killings. It's astonishing. These right-wing neo-Nazis, skinheads, religious fanatics, crazy people, like, just eaten up with fear and self-loathing and self-contempt and hatred for just anything or anybody that doesn't look exactly like them. And in fact, even they hate themselves, obviously, this acting out that they do with their guns. All of this is being generated by, fed by, encouraged by people like Glenn Beck, Neil Bortz, Sean Hannity, the Pig Man, Michael Savage, these people on the radio station in Portland, Oregon. Was it Portland or was it Sacramento? Who decided to beat up on transgender children. Michael Savage in San Francisco, who decided to beat up on autistic children. There's no limits to these people anymore. Look, this is a country of 300 million plus people. If 10% of us are certifiably insane, but on the loose, that's 30 million people. If 5% of us are certifiably insane but on the loose, that's 15 million people. If 2.5% of us are certifiably insane but on the loose, that's 7.5 million people. When are we going to wake up in this country to, I hate that expression, but when are we going to wake up in this country to the fact that this daily blanketing of the country, coast to coast, border to border, with this right-wing insanity on talk radio, when are we going to wake up to the fact that this is killing us. It's murdering us. It's destroying everything that we thought we have. When are we going to wake up to that and do something? When are we going to take the utilitarian approach to talk radio and say, look, for the good of the majority of people in this country, we're going to end. That's right, end it. There's not going to be any more of this wall-to-wall hatred, this wall-to-wall misinformation, the lies. I have tried to figure out if there's anything that you hear on right-wing talk radio that even comes close to the truth. And the answer, the quick answer is no. No, there's nothing out there. Everything from Matt Drudge all the way down the food chain to the most insignificant little gutter snipe working on some radio station in Kentucky or California or South Carolina. Every single thing they say is a lie. Everything. Unless they're reporting on the latest Hollywood news or something. It's all lies. It's all deception. It's misinformation. It's disinformation. So how much longer? How much longer? Today, we had to endure an 88-year-old white supremacist with a rifle walking into the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. and opening fire. A security guard tonight, Stephen T. Johns, is dead. Because Rush Limbaugh and Neil Bortz and Sean Hannity and Matt Drudge and Michael Savage and all the rest of the, Glenn Beck, all the rest of these people pump daily, hourly, minute by minute into public discourse hatred, fear, contempt. They do it every day. They do it without let up. They are not self-censoring. It's a constant deluge in this country of this poison from these right-wingers. Poison. This guy was a member of FreeRepublic.com. And as our technical advisor emailed me earlier tonight, my comment on Freepers, and you may quote me, Freepers are their own special sort of crazy. Distill all the paranoia of the John Birch Society, inform it with the skewed worldview of Rush Limbaugh, and then season with white supremacism, militia weapon fetishes, and garnish that with delightful tang of inbreeding, and you have Freeperville. For those of you who are subscribers to the Malloy podcast, and in doing that, you have access to the Malloy's Uncensored mailbag videos that we put up every periodically, usually once a week, sometimes a little bit longer. You know the kinds of emails that I get here. And, you know, what do I attack? And I attack nightly. What do I attack on this program? I attack bigotry, racism, sexism, corporatism, the destruction of the Constitution, the liars, the cheats, the cowards, the sneaks. And just from my own point of view, not that it bothers me, I find it kind of amusing. I mean that literally. That's why we have Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag, to put that garbage up, so we can all get a chuckle out of it. It's not scary stuff to me, but I'm not a security guard at the Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. And I'm not a medical doctor that operates within what one would presume would be a cone of privacy around a woman and her physician and her partner or spouse or husband or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. But the hatred that's pumped into this country daily by so-called into discourse by these right-wing talk show hosts, these so-called Christians, it is without let-up. It does not stop. It's wall-to-wall, moment-to-moment. It goes on all day long, border-to-border, coast-to-coast, from Focused on the Family to Limbaugh's Little Hate Fest to Neil Bortz, who I don't understand how Neil Bortz has managed to stay alive as long as he has because of the vitriolic hatred that he puts out over the air. On and on and on about poor people and black people and Mexican people and immigrant people. It never stops. We'll be back. The subject matter that you hear on these right-wing programs is beyond ludicrous. For example, the whole gun issue. You hear this over and over and over again, and you've been hearing it if you go to these sewers and listen to this stuff, or their sewer-like websites. You know, the Democrats, the liberals are going to take your guns, yada, yada, yada. In the meantime, Congress keeps passing and various presidents keep signing laws to expand the area in which guns, loaded guns, can be taken. The most recent is national parks. You can take your gun to a church. You can take it to a school. You can take it to a college graduation. You can, and the ability to take a loaded weapon to places like this is celebrated by these right-wing crazies on the one hand, and on the other, they constantly bitch and complain and moan and tell you that the government is coming to get your guns. Now, a borderline psychopath like this guy today, or like the guy who shot the physician, Dr. Tiller, or like the skinhead Nazi vermin who infest this society, or the right-wing church liars who are constantly milking the terminally stupid of their own souls on a daily basis. All of these people taken together, how many folks in that group? And it's a vast group. You know, Limbaugh claims millions of listeners a week. How many of those people are right on the line? And all it takes is a little nudge by Glenn Beck or Neil Bortz or Rush Limbaugh to push them over the edge, where all of a sudden that little coil inside their brain snaps and you can't put it back, and they pick up a gun and go after their particular target, be it a Muslim, a Jew, a gay person, a retarded child, a developmentally challenged child, a woman seeking an abortion, a divorced woman. The list goes on and on and on and on. And the pigs in talk radio understand this. They know this. This is what they play into. There was a convocation in New York, I guess, a couple of days ago, last week, hosted by this Talkers Magazine rag. And there were two or three liberals, the only two or three left remaining. I was invited to it and more or less told them to go stick it where the sun doesn't shine. I don't hang out with vermin like that. But I think Stephanie went, I think Hartman went, I think a couple other people on the non-right-wing side went. I don't know what the attendance was. But if you went to the website, Talkers Magazine, and see who was coming to this thing and look at the daily schedule, it read like a list of SS officers in the 30s. There they were. And that's what Talkers Magazine is. It's a focal point for these people when they had these conventions. The last one I went to, which was about 7 years ago, I almost ripped Michael Medved's goddamn head off. He got me so angry. Sitting on a panel with these swine. And that was 7 years ago, 6 years ago. So, it's just an unendless stream of poison that right-wing talk radio, conservative talk radio, so-called, Republican, whatever you want to call it, a steady stream of poison. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse. The names being called the President of the United States is, that's okay. But putting into the heads of crazy people that he's a Muslim who took his oath on the Quran, who is not an American citizen, on and on and on, stuff that will push a Limbaugh listener or a Glenn Beck crazy person or a Sean Hannity brain dead fool right over the edge, or one of these people who listens to so-called Christian talk like Focus on the Family or some of these other vile, filthy sewers of lies and deceit, push them right over the edge. Well, today's the day I get my gun and go kill a doctor. This is not political dissent these people are talking about. This is not a difference in opinion on how to govern the country. This is poison. This is pure, unadulterated poison that is pumped daily without let up, coast to coast, border to border, into this country, into the unconscious minds of anyone who gets near AM radio. It never stops. It begins at 6 o'clock in the morning with attacks on transgendered children, and it goes until 9 o'clock at night with attacks on Muslims and Jews and gays and liberals and progressives and people seeking an abortion, on and on and on, without let up. And my question is, how much longer can this society handle this injection, this 18-hour-a-day injection of poison into this country before we finally die, all of us, huh?
Guns hung at his hips. He rode into a cattle town, a smile upon his lips. He stopped and walked into a bar, laid his money down. But his mother's words echoed again. Don't take your guns to town, son. Leave your guns at home, Bill. Don't take your guns to town.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
In the air, from those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the
25 before the hour.
Ain't exactly real, or it's
a couple
real,
emails. Justine in Maryland writes, Mike, don't forget the racist, misogynist female conservative talkers filling the airwaves with their own brand of hate, such as Laura Ingraham, who calls abortion Hitlerian. Interesting that Limbaugh, a drug addict who reportedly went through treatment, and Ingraham, a breast cancer survivor, seemed to be filled with even more vitriol after surviving those events. Normal human beings usually have a little more gratitude when given a second chance, which says it all, I guess. Justine in Maryland. Chris in Warren, PA writes, Mike, speaking of white supremacy and general insanity in America, is it any surprise that North Carolina just passed a resolution honoring the service of racist, homophobic freak from hell, Jesse Helms? Sometimes I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. The resolution was passed almost unanimously with a lone dissenting vote from a lesbian state senator. Unbelievable. I guess that's all there is to say. Chris in Warren, PA. David writes, the so-called authorities say this white supremacist shooter today was, quote, being watched, end quote, yet he walked around downtown D.C. with a loaded rifle, and into the Holocaust Memorial Museum. Now they are saying that this is an isolated incident with a lone actor. How many effing unrelated shootings have to happen before the experts detect a pattern? Here's a hint. White, crazed racists with guns. David. Being watched, huh? Email from, Paul. Mike, I'm writing to you today after the latest diabolical hate crime committed by a right-wing white supremacist in Washington, D.C. I blame Limbaugh, Hannity, Bortz, Beck, Wiener Savage, and every other conservative talk show host in this country. They have blood on their hands. It's time for us to take serious action and rid the airwaves of this hatred. Freedom of speech does not give any of us the right to spread bigotry and incite violence, and that is exactly what these people have done. I'm a gay man, and this past weekend was a huge event for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered community in a major theme park in Florida. I wonder which one that is. It started in 1991 when a group of gay men and women gathered in the park wearing red T-shirts to show our visibility. It was created to get the straight community with their children to see us, see how we are human, and start a dialogue. It has grown into a movement of over 300,000 this year. We simply enter the park wearing the color red, some with creative slogans like, "Who would Jesus discriminate against?" I've never been more proud of my community and country than on this day of diversity. To see such solidarity, love, human kindness, and people having a great deal of fun. I've attended this gathering several times, but this year is a little different. As a 45-year-old man, I had more trepidation about attending than I did when I was younger. And with the current hate-filled climate fueled by the Bush administration and many religious groups, I'm not as comfortable as I'd been in the past. I'm happy to report that the day went by without incident. For the most part, I experienced more pride than prejudice. There were a few families with fathers who either belched in my face or gave me a look of disgust, and a few spit at my feet as I walked past them. But I suppose that's better than being tied to a fence and left for dead, bludgeoned with a beer bottle, or physically attacked. I know that things are changing, it's just not fast enough. While driving around Florida, all we could hear on the radio was religious fire and brimstone programming, Dr. Laura, Rush Limbaugh, and the like. Every station on AM and FM continuously vomited conservative, hate-filled programming. I know you've mentioned this before, but to actually be in that environment was nothing short of disgusting. I'm a podcast subscriber, and we listen to your program on my iPhone the entire week. I used to be the one who believed in fairness, that it's okay for conservatives and religious folks to have a platform, but not anymore. They are terrorists. In closing, on the last day of events, as we were leaving the park, we had a fantastic day and just saw a spectacular laser and fireworks display. As we exited, a young father said to his son of 7 or 8 years of age, "Give me a disco yell." The kid then sang, "Ooh-wah, ooh-wah, disco dance." The father was begging for my attention with a friendly, sincere, and Cheshire Cat smile, communicating that things are changing, and he was making a point to let me know and his son know just how far we've come. I hope he's listening to your program. Our world is so much better with men like him in it. Paul. Yeah, one of the most disturbing things that I think can be experienced in this country is what he just mentioned about you can pick any state. I don't care where it is. Pick any major city. Pick New York or Chicago. Turn on your radio. New York and Chicago, traditionally, both Democratic cities, big D, Democratic cities, with huge minority populations, huge religious diversity, for the most part, extremely liberal in their voting patterns. They may have their little neighborhood prejudices. I understand that. I lived in Chicago for 3 years. I know about that. But overall, these huge, massive, diverse communities. And what do you hear when you're driving around Chicago or New York or San Francisco or Los Angeles or Sacramento? What do you hear? You hear the same thing you would hear in every little bohunk town here in the South. Every little inbred city up and down the East Coast and around the Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Panhandle, Gulf Coast area, all you hear is right-wing hate, ugliness, poison, all day, every day, without let-up. No truth, nothing with insight, nothing with context, nothing but poison, vitriol, hatred. And in those areas where it's all coming through syndicated talk shows from the big guns, people like Limbaugh and Bortz and Hannity and Savage and Beck, these white men are all multimillionaires. They have syndicating companies who are thrilled to put them into another area so they can poison that area. Thrilled when they sign up another advertiser because the advertiser knows that he is safe. Because nobody will ever challenge. The Democrats won't challenge. The Christians who don't believe in the poisonous garbage that right-wing Christians believe in. Nobody would challenge these sons of bitches. And the audience, remember, if the audience is 10% of the American population, that's 30 million people. If it's 20%, that's 60 million. How many people listen to this poison being pumped into their brains every single day without let up, on and on and on, even in places where you would expect anti-union talk in Detroit? Yes. Anti-union talk in Chicago? Yes. Only not just anti-union. It's their fault that the corporations have failed. It's their fault that there are no jobs. It's their fault, on and on and on, every goddamn day without let up. The spigot, this fire hose of poison, lies, deceit, deception, pumped into this country. When are we going to make it stop? A woman gets nominated to be a Supreme Court Associate Justice. She makes a statement 8 years ago when she's addressing a group about gender and race discrimination. And she makes a clearly obvious statement that a Latina woman, which is redundant, would have more insight into gender and race discrimination than a white male if both were sitting on a bench being a judge. And that statement is taken by swine like Newt Gingrich and Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity and Savage and the rest of these people, Bortz, and it's twisted into something ugly and hateful. Ah, oh, she's a racist. 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 Over and over, without let up, across the country, border to border, coast to coast, days on end, hour after hour after hour after hour. This is what right-wing talk radio does. It is a fountain of poison, deception, lies, sickness, insanity, craziness, hatred. Until eventually people pick up a gun and go to the Holocaust Memorial Museum and start shooting. Or pick up a gun and go invade a doctor's office and start shooting. Or a church and start shooting. Or a cemetery and start shooting. Or a national park and start shooting. Or a fast food restaurant and start shooting. Or a synagogue or a temple or a mosque and start shooting. We'll be back.
To the other side. 41 shots cut through the night. You're kneeling over his body in the vestibule, praying for his life. Well, is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it a wallet? This is your life. It ain't no secret.
end your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day.
10 before the hour. The guy's name was Von Brunn, 88 years old. Police and other agents went to his apartment complex in Annapolis, Maryland today after the shooting, looking for potential evidence. He's moved around in white supremacist circles, living for a while in Hayden, Idaho. That's the same community that was home to the founder of the so-called Aryan Nation people. The Holocaust Museum shooting today comes 11 days after another hate crime, the murder of Kansas Dr. George Tiller. The violence underscores, this is, what am I reading here? I don't know. The violence underscores a troubling trend. In the past 8 years, the number of hate groups in America has exploded. 8 years. Who was in power during those 8 years? That's right. You see? Up 50% from 602 in 2000 to 926 last year. Sources say Von Brunn apparently acted alone and police know of no other targets, but they're keenly aware that the hatred he spewed is at the base of a wider ongoing threat. Well, yeah, of course. Of course it is. Exactly what we're talking about. Exactly. Bill writes, Mike, I have no idea how we silence the right-wing murderous radio talkers, not when they are paid for and supported by the richest bastions of wealth and media power in the country. At the bottom of it all is the most primal, virulent human vice, greed, unabated, uncontrollable, all-powerful over the entire country at the highest levels, mostly centered in Washington and Wall Street, of course, but rampant everywhere. We are in dire straits, being destroyed from within the way it always works. Gil writes, Mike, a professor of mine spoke decades ago about owning a gun and a vehicle. It's the only power that the average person, usually male, has left. Gil. You know, that's kind of sad. That's a sad commentary, I think. Maybe the professor was just making an observation. You know, to externalize power like that is, I think, probably the most basic error that a human being can make. And it's usually made by people who are uneducated or eaten up with fear, or have no true sense of themselves, who are violated and abused, usually as children, probably as adults, and who feel that the only way to display power is to pick up some sort of external object and say, look, I've got a Rolex. Look, I've got a Glock 9. Look, I have a Corvette. Look, I'm powerful. That's not what power is. That's children's toys. It just so happens that most of these children's toys that adults develop are lethal as hell. You know where power comes from. Of course you do. Of course you do. Doesn't come from that, does it? Al in Pensacola writes, Mike, here in Pensacola, a hotbed of hate. The FM sports talk radio breaks in the early evening with Bill O'Reilly and some other hate talk. A freaking sports talk radio with right-wing hate talk. That's the reason I bought Sirius Radio, so that I can listen to what I want. I'm waiting for Sirius to go a la carte, so I wouldn't have to pay for crap I don't want. Okay. CAIR, C-A-I-R, which is the acronym for the Council on American Islamic Relations. You can check them out at CAIR.com, CAIR.com. In a statement today, CAIR said, quote, we condemn this apparent bias-motivated attack and stand with the Jewish community and with Americans of all faiths in repudiating the kind of hatred and intolerance that can lead to such disturbing incidents, end quote. And it adds, the Council on American Islamic Relations today called on law enforcement authorities in Texas to investigate an alleged assault on a Muslim in that state as a hate crime. The victim, a 34-year-old white convert to Islam, reported to CAIR that two former co-workers came to his Gilmer, Texas home after midnight on Saturday and punched, choked, and kicked him without provocation. During the assault, the attackers reportedly used religious slurs such as, you Muslim piece of blank. Pray to Allah, MF-er, and you are a traitor. We're at war with these people. At one point during the alleged assault, the victim says he felt the barrel of a gun pressed to his head. As the attackers left, they allegedly threatened to harm him again if he called police. He was reportedly told by one assailant, "If I can't get you, my people will." The victim has since moved out of his home in response to this threat. And there's more. But this is what, who's the guy on CNN at night? Used to be the business reporter. Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs is probably premier in on television, on CNN especially. Lou Dobbs is as vitriolic and hate-filled as anybody on CNN. He's also as ignorant in his tirades against immigrants. It never stops. It just never stops. We have a media in this country that is just saturated with hate talk. Saturated. And it is a very telling fact that the increase in the number of these hate groups increased 50% over the past 8 years. During the Bush crime family's reign in this country, during the ascendancy of Republicans who can no more govern than a handful of worms, the only thing Republicans have is dissension and hate and diversion, or not diversion. Well, yeah, diversion. The party of no. They do nothing for anyone. Again, the challenge is always there. You show me one thing that the Republican Party has done for everyone in this country over the past 8 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. You cannot do it because they have done nothing. We'll be back after the break, and I think we'll be joined by former Alabama Governor Don Siegel. Stay with us. About 7 past the hour. I don't know how many of you are familiar with not just the case of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, but the person Don Siegelman. He's going to join us in a second. Let me just fill you in. I would assume that most of the people who listen to this program are fully aware of Don Siegelman and what he has been enduring since 2005. So we're 4 years into this now. In 1979, Siegelman was elected Secretary of State of Alabama. He served as Secretary of State from 79 to 87, and then as the Alabama Attorney General from 87 to 91, then as Lieutenant Governor from 95 to 99, and in 1999, he won election to governor on his first attempt. He got close to 60% of the vote. On May 27th, 2004, Siegelman was served an indictment on federal charges, but the day after his trial began, prosecutors abruptly dropped all charges. The judge threw out much of the prosecution's evidence and stated that no new charges could be refiled based on the disallowed evidence. And then on October 26, 2005, Siegelman was indicted on new charges of bribery and mail fraud. Two former Siegelman aides were charged in the indictment as well. Siegelman was accused of trading government favors for campaign donations when he was governor from 1999 to 2003 and lieutenant governor from 1995 to 1999. Richard Scrushy, founder and former CEO of HealthSouth, was accused of arranging $500,000 in donations to Siegelman's campaign for a state lottery fund for universal education in exchange for a seat on a state hospital regulatory board. Scrushy, who had served on that board over the past three Republican administrations, had recently been investigated for his part in the HealthSouth Corporation fraud scandal. On June 29, 2006, just 3 weeks after losing the primary, a federal jury found both Siegelman and Scrushy guilty on seven of the 33 counts in the indictment. Two co-defendants were acquitted of all charges. Siegelman was convicted on one count of bribery, one count of conspiracy to commit honest service mail fraud, four counts of honest services mail fraud, and one count of obstruction of justice. Siegelman was acquitted on 25 counts, including the indictment's allegations of a widespread RICO conspiracy. Siegelman has said in his defense that Scrushy had been on the board of the State Hospital Regulatory Board during several preceding governorships, and that Scrushy's contributions toward the state lottery fund for universal education was unrelated. He says that such charges, in addition to being unfounded, are without precedent. Siegelman is out on bond. Scrushy remains in federal prison. And most recently, what I have heard until I got an email from Don this evening was that the Obama Justice Department, and I'll call it that because Obama's the president and Eric Holder is the attorney general, but somebody or some bodies, plural, within the Obama Justice Department now is trying to seek additional prison time for Don Siegelman. Couple more quotes here. Professor Bennett Gershman of Pace University School of Law, the preeminent scholar in the field of prosecutorial misconduct, who wrote the book Prosecutorial Misconduct, said, quote, "I've never encountered another prosecution," he's referring to Siegelman's, "in which it appears so clearly that the prosecutors were zealously bent on pursuing an individual rather than on a crime. An example of bad faith prosecution, the Siegelman case may be without parallel as an example of bad faith prosecution. And there's no better example of the corrosive effect on the reputation of the Department of Justice than the prosecution of Don Siegelman." It goes on and on and on. 54 former attorneys general, Democrats and Republicans, said in the 11th Circuit's ruling in the Siegelman case, or I should say that the 11th Circuit's ruling in the Siegelman case means, quote, "A prosecutor has the power to indict and convict any politician and any donor whenever a donation was made, and the politician took action consistent with the donor's desires while aware of said desire." 54 former state attorneys general, Democrats and Republicans, said in their brief to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in the Siegelman case, quote, "Such an interpretation puts at risk every politician who accepts a campaign contribution. It criminalizes activities that fall short of an explicit quid pro quo agreement and can only lead to an impermissible chilling effect on the First Amendment right to contribute to political campaigns." I could sit here and talk for the next two or three hours about the Siegelman case, but let's welcome Don Siegelman. Don, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, Mark, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here. I want to add that I was convicted of something that has never before been considered a crime in America, according to the New York Times. I reappointed a contributor to a non-paying, all-voluntary board, a board, as you noted, on which this gentleman had sat through three previous governors.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Woods, a Republican attorney general from Arizona, said on 60 Minutes that they couldn't beat Siegelman fair and square, so they targeted him with this prosecution. My investigation was started by Karl Rove's client, the attorney general of Alabama. I was brought to trial 1 month before the election by the U.S. attorney who is the wife of my Republican opponent's campaign manager. I want to say that again. The person who investigated me and brought me to trial during my campaign for reelection is the wife of my opponent's campaign manager, who happens to be Karl Rove's best friend in Alabama. After the trial, a Republican lawyer came forward and gave sworn testimony to the House Judiciary Committee that Karl Rove was directing the Department of Justice to prosecute me. After I was convicted, my sentence was enhanced for speaking out against the political nature of the prosecution. I was handcuffed, shackled. I was taken to Atlanta, to the maximum security prison there, and put in solitary confinement. Finally, I was released 9 months later on an 11th Circuit Court of Appeals ruling because they said there were substantial questions of law and fact likely to result in a reversal. And that was after, as you noted, 54 former state attorneys general, both Republicans and Democrats, filed a brief saying that what I did was in fact, no crime. The point I would like to make, I guess, is twofold. One, if this can happen to me as a governor, it can happen to anybody in this country. It can happen to you, Mike. It can happen to your producer. It can happen to you, any member of your family. But so this fight that I'm fighting, yes, it's about my freedom, but it's also about restoring justice and bringing people like Karl Rove to justice, who has threatened our democracy, subverted our constitutional rights, and used the Department of Justice as a political weapon to attack his political opponents.
Mm-hmm. Why? And we have a break here in just a minute, Don, that I'll have to take. But let me get the question out. What would be the reason that Rove or the Bush political machine would reach into Alabama politics, for God's sake, and go after a man who had, as you did, a sterling record all the way up? I mean,
easy answer.
Okay,
let's go ahead and take a break, and I'll be glad to expound on that when we come.
Yeah, because that's the part that, let me put you on hold. We'll come back in a second. We're talking with Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama, former attorney general of Alabama, who was a target of Karl Rove and the Bush crime family. And when we come back, we will find out why. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I am a patriot. I am a patriot. Yes, I am. Country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, we're talking with former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, and what occurred when Siegelman found himself as a target of Karl Rove. The reason a former Alabama Attorney General and Governor was targeted by the Rove or the Republican or the Bush machine. What was the point?
Well, it requires, Mike, a little background.
Okay.
After the 92 presidential campaign, when Rove was running George Hubert H. Walker Bush's reelection campaign and lost to Bill Clinton,
mm-hmm.
he and his close friend, a man named Bill Canary, moved to Alabama. They came to Alabama. They both married girls from Alabama. Most people don't know that Karl Rove married a young lady from Mobile, Alabama, and his buddy, a longtime 25-year friend, Bill Canary, married a woman who was an assistant to the Attorney General of Alabama at that time. And Karl Rove settled on the Gulf Coast, built his home at a place called Rosemary Beach, where he has his home today. He and Bill Canary ran a lot of campaigns out of Alabama to take over the Alabama Supreme Court, as Karl Rove did in Texas. It was during that time that I had my first run-in with Karl Rove in 1994, when Karl Rove tried to steal his first election in Alabama, the race for the Chief Justice of Alabama. I was elected as a lieutenant governor in 1994. Karl Rove was there in 1998 when I was elected governor. His candidate then was the Attorney General of Alabama. Shortly after I was inaugurated in January of 1999, I endorsed Al Gore for president. Immediately thereafter, Karl Rove's client, the Attorney General, started an investigation. The comment by the Republican Attorney General from Arizona, Grant Woods, who said they couldn't beat Sigelman fair and square, so they targeted him with this investigation, is something that I'd like for your listeners to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I was going through my 4 years as governor, I brought in 5 automobile plants. We started a construction on 1,000 new schools. We brought in Mercedes, Honda, 2 Honda plants, a Hyundai plant, Toyota. We were blowing and going. And I know this may offend some of your listeners, but I want to put my reelection in 2002 in context. I was the only Democratic governor running in 2002, who was endorsed by Charlton Heston, president of the National Rifle Association. Keep in mind that I am a Southern liberal,
mm-hmm.
And I have fought for civil rights. I've fought for the rights of minorities in Alabama. As Attorney General, I rolled back cases when they were offensive to standards of decency and justice. But I was endorsed by the National Rifle Association.
Mm-hmm.
In the face of the 2 United States Republican senators, Jeff Sessions and Richard Shelby, in trying to get them not to endorse me, I was heralded by the Kiplinger letter in 2002 as a viable candidate for Vice President of the United States in 2004. I was planning to hold George Bush's feet to the fire about the war in Afghanistan and Iran. I was also in Iraq, and I was planning to hold him accountable for his failed education policies and his economic policies. It was during that time that when the polls started showing that I would easily win re-election, that my troubles started with the state attorney general, who was Karl Rove's client.
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer to your question about why would Karl Rove be interested in somebody in Alabama, one, he has Alabama roots. He has Alabama connections. His wife is from Alabama. He lives on the Gulf Coast. He ran a bunch of campaigns here. I did battle with him in 94, and 96, and 98, and 2000, and 2002.
So it got real personal.
It got very personal, and you noticed when John Conyers asked Karl Rove to testify before the Judiciary Committee,
mm-hmm.
he first said he would, then he said he wouldn't, then he said he would only testify if he was not under oath and if there was nobody there to take down what he had to say. Now he's planning to come back sometime, perhaps soon, before the Judiciary Committee in an informal setting. In a deposition-like setting where he will not be put under oath, but could be charged with lying to Congress. But, you know, what I'm saying is that Carl Rove had every reason to go after me because I was beating him and the Republican mm-hmm. Party in a Republican state, and I was also planning to take on George W. Bush in some of the primary states.
Don, we got a break again. Can you hold on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because we're just getting to the good part. So hold on till we come back after this break. We're talking with former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
My band. I took the back seat out and I put it on the ground. No need to tell you what it was putting down. Don't stop me talking. I'll tell you everything I know. I gotta break.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, continuing our discussion here with former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. All right, pick it up right where you left off, Don, if you don't mind.
Well, you had asked me why Carl Rove would be interested
right.
in Alabama, and I gave you some background that most people don't, you know, would not have any idea that Carl Rove, this omnipresent figure on Fox News, mm-hmm. actually lives on the Gulf Coast, is now, married to someone from Alabama, has run many campaigns in the state of Alabama, and that we did mm-hmm. battle here. Carl Rove saw me as an obstacle to his taking over the state and to take over the governorships of most states. I mean, his objective was to...
Right.
It was a 50-state strategy to have a Republican majority in all states. As the Republican Attorney General of Arizona said, he couldn't beat me fair and square, so they targeted me with this prosecution. But what I wanted to jump onto now is the testimony of a Republican lawyer, a woman who was hired, she says, by Carl Rove and the husband of my prosecutor, to do an investigative background research on me to try to find a... She told 60 Minutes that she was... CBS's 60 Minutes, that she was hired by these people, Rove and the husband of my prosecutor, to dig up dirt on Don Siegelman.
Mm-hmm.
She came forward, and I had never seen this woman until sometime after I'd gotten out of prison, but... she came forward and gave sworn testimony, Mike, to the House Judiciary Committee that Carl Rove was behind my prosecution.
Right.
She also said that she was personally on a telephone conversation where the husband of my prosecutor said that, and who was also managing my opponent's campaign, was telling the son and some other campaign workers of my Republican opponent that they didn't need to worry about me anymore because his wife, who was the U.S. attorney, was going to take care of me. And she went on to describe other things, nefarious conversations, where I was described as a cockroach, a person that wouldn't die politically, and that they needed to do something to put me to a political death once and for all. And the husband of my prosecutor purportedly said, according to the sworn testimony of this Republican lawyer,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't need to worry about me anymore, that he had talked to Carl, and Carl had talked to the Department of Justice, and they were already on my case.
They absolutely wanted to destroy you. And you know, I've had your daughter on the program before about a year ago, so... The background to this is just horrifying. I mean, to think that this kind of activity, political activity, that makes you the only thing missing here that would make it right out of a totalitarian state playbook is somebody with a gun and a silencer on it.
How about this? How about a country that also has reduces our civil liberties so that we can be wiretapped without a warrant? So that we can interrogate people through torture, so that we can present false evidence to go into a war when there's no justification for it.
Mm.
How about a country that also condones elections that are stolen? Now, I'm not going to talk about the Florida election. I want to talk about my re-election campaign in 2002.
Right.
Most people, Mike, would not believe that the United States of America, their country, could possibly do these kinds of things. They don't want to believe.
That's right.
That in their United States of America, that elections are stolen. But in my case, in 2002, the night of the election, I was declared the winner not only by the election officials of Alabama, but by CBS, ABC, NBC, probably Fox News, too. I don't remember. Later that night, after midnight, after the lights had gone out in the courthouse, Southern Alabama County Courthouse,
right,
an all-Republican county, the lights came on in the basement of the sheriff's office, and there was a private recount of the votes. Votes were shifted electronically from my opponent, 5,000 votes from him to, from me to him, and the next day he was declared the winner by this all-Republican election commission in this South Alabama county. But interestingly, the two people who either claimed credit or who were given credit for stealing that election and swinging the votes to my Republican opponent, whose campaign manager was my prosecutor's husband,
right,
the close friend of Karl Rove, the two people who got credit or claimed credit was Karl Rove's partner, and also a man who later, immediately thereafter, after the election, went to work for a Jack Abramoff and Tom DeLay related lobbying company called the Alexandria Group. There are just so many Karl Rove fingerprints.
You know, I've got to ask, did you, and a dumb question, Don, but I have to answer ask it anyway, because this is almost Kafka-esque. Did you ever think, when you entered the politics or just got on with your life, that anything like this could happen to you?
No, absolutely not. I lived a life of trying to improve our system. I as a young man, I was opposed to the war in Vietnam. I worked in some anti-war activities to try to bring the country back to its senses. When I was Secretary of State, I was the first statewide elected official in the United States to endorse an extension of the Voting Rights Act, as Ronald Reagan was opposing it. I did everything I could throughout my career to try to make the system work. The one thing that shocked me, I guess, is after the conviction, I said a quiet prayer to myself, because I had been attorney general,
mm-hmm,
where I, Mike, had set execution dates for people who had been convicted of capital murder.
Mm-hmm.
And as governor, I had held clemency hearings, listening to the pleas of family members for their loved ones who were about to be executed. And I asked God to forgive me if I had made a mistake, because I realized then that the system is flawed,
mm-hmm,
and that rogue prosecutors,
right,
could set somebody up and could make the system work to convict somebody who had not committed a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some flaws. There's some things that happened in my case that I'm sure has happened many times throughout the United States in other trials.
Mm-hmm.
The only evidence that was presented against me was evidence that the prosecution knew was false at the time they elicited the testimony from a convicted felon whom they had worked out a plea bargain agreement with, a man who was who had admitted to taking $350,000 in bribes, was facing 40 years in prison. They recommended no prison time for this guy in exchange for his testimony that, again, was the only testimony that was given that caused my conviction. The interesting thing was it took the government 70 interviews. They interviewed this felon over 70 times before he got his answers straight the way they wanted them, before they put him on the stand.
Oh, my God.
That was admitted by the lawyer for this guy, and it's something that we hope will be investigated by the Department of Justice.
What has stopped you? And I've just got to ask this because I know my limits. What has stopped you from hunting down a couple of these people and just beating the living hell out of them?
That would give them a real reason for putting me in prison.
Yeah, it would. It would.
I keep thinking that the system is going to kick into gear and will work. We lost our appeal before the 11th Circuit.
Well, that's what I'll ask you next. We've got another break here, Don, and what I want to ask next, and we'll have about 10 minutes when we come back, or 8 minutes, what is where this stands now. I know I've read, and maybe it was your daughter who was on this program, right, Kathy? Didn't we have Don say, yeah, the effect that this has had on your family. And the stress and the unbelievable hell that you've gone through. So I want to know what I recently heard was that, either your appeal has been turned down or the Justice Department now is recommending even more time. So I want to hear about that when we come back. All right.
Look forward to it.
All right. Don Siegelman is our guest, former governor of Alabama, who, if ever there has been a horrendous political prosecution in this country, Don Siegelman is a victim of that prosecution. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Renegade Talk Radio done right, from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
It is about 10 minutes before the hour. One thing I would like you to do in this interview with former Governor Don Siegelman is finished. There are so many websites you can go to get information about what happened to him, but go to Wikipedia.org and just type in his name and the information will come up, plus a lot of links to understand fully what can happen in this country when you are targeted by an organization like that run by Karl Rove. Where does this stand now?
Well, let me first say that I believe the system can and will work. I started to say should work, but I believe it. I'm going to say that it can and will work. So we're appealing to the United States Supreme Court, and also, you know, the actions by Eric Holder in throwing out charges against Ted Stevens and some other people because of prosecutorial misconduct gives me some hope that they will at some point start looking at my case and say, "Whoa, wait a minute! There's just too much here.
Right.
You know, we need to throw this out and start over." There was an interesting headline in the Huffington Post recently that said Obama offers key posts to those who bankrolled his campaign. Well, in my case, I appointed a contributor to. It wasn't even to my campaign. It was to a campaign to establish a free college education for all Alabama kids. fashioned after the Hope College Scholarship Program in Georgia.
Right.
We were going to start a lottery here, and I was raising money, and I had asked this guy if he would contribute to this campaign to help give our kids a free college scholarships, and he said, yes, I'll raise some money and I'll give some money. Later, I put him on this board that he had served on through three previous governors.
Right.
Well, there's absolutely no difference in what I did and what Obama is doing now, and that is appointing people who gave money to his campaign to ambassadorships.
Happens all the time.
This is something we may not like it. It may leave a bad taste in our mouth, but this is American politics, and that's what the United States Supreme Court said in its historic decision in 1991 in a case called McCormick versus the United States. It involved a West Virginia legislator who had taken some money from some doctors and later had tried to help them increase, I think, their Medicaid payments through the state legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And what the court said was, you know, in cases involving a campaign contribution, there must be an explicit agreement
right. To
trade something for the money. Well, in my case, the 11th Circuit said it doesn't have to be an explicit or an express agreement. The jury can infer an agreement from the minds and actions of the actors, which is the total opposite of explicit. So we're hopeful that the United States Supreme Court will look at this, will throw it out, will say this is wrong, this is not the law in America, and these convictions should be overturned. So it is that is my hope. It's also my hope that that Eric Holder will take a look at this case and will look at the prosecutorial misconduct and not only throw my case out, but we'll put the prosecutors under the microscope and ask them questions about what their connections are between them and Karl Rove. This case, yes, I want to be out from under this this prosecution, but more than that, if you can believe it, is that I want Karl Rove put under the microscope and I want him held accountable for abusing his power.
Amen.
And abusing the power of the Department of Justice to go after his political enemies. Because we need to make an example of out of this so that this kind of behavior does not or is not likely to happen again in the future.
You know, I think you have, there are millions, if not tens of millions of Americans who, having an understanding of your case and what happened to you, would feel exactly the same as what you just said. It's time for the people who have committed so many perversions of our system over the past 8 years to be examined. And it doesn't start or it doesn't stop with Karl Rove. There is
exactly. So
much. This is one of the reasons you're a Democrat. I'm a Democrat. One of the reasons that the National Democratic Party has gotten me so angry is because there are positions in power in that people in positions of power in that party that have refused up to this point.
Absolutely, Mike.
To push.
It's shameful.
Yeah,
shameful.
To push for inquiries, investigations. I don't care what they call it. But what happened in this country over the past 8 years is horrifying.
It cannot be swept under the rug if our democracy is going to survive. If we want this country and our democracy to survive, this kind of behavior cannot be swept under the rug, and those people who committed these atrocities have to be brought to justice. As ugly and as horrifying as it will be to the American people, we have to confront the wrongs that we have done.
That's true. That is so true. Give us your website so that people...
It is Don Sigelman, I-before-E, Don Sigelman, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N, .org or .com. And I would encourage your listeners to go on there for more information.
Yeah.
And if they want to help me with my legal defense fund, that certainly would be welcome too. But more importantly, please get after your congressmen and senators. Tell them to get on the Department of Justice and tell them to investigate the prosecutorial misconduct in the Sigelman case. And let's bring Karl Rove to justice.
I hear that.
More justice in this country.
I hear that. Don, thank you so much for your time. Let's talk again. I want to see all of this taken off of you. And I think most Americans who believe in justice feel the same way. Thanks so much for talking with us, okay?
Mike, thank you so much.
All right, Don. Take
God
care.
Bless.
We'll talk again. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. come back, 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. You know, following, as I have, not to the degree that people active in his defense have, but following as I have the Don Siegelman case, and having had about an hour-long conversation with his daughter, was that back in the Air America days, Kathy, I think? And now this interview with, or this conversation with Don himself, it sets in motion for me an awful lot of stuff. In the first place, how horribly perverse and sick Republicans have made our political system. And yes, Republicans. Are Democrats incompetent and jerks and cowards? Yes. But they are not criminals to the extent that these Republicans, I mean, this Siegelman case sounds like something out of a Kafka novel. It does. Or worse. It is just astonishing. Also, it brings into sharp focus for me prosecutorial misconduct. How many tens of thousands of people are sitting in prisons and state prisons and federal prisons and county jails right now who are there because of prosecutorial misconduct? How often do you pick up your paper? I don't know what it's like in the North so much, but here in Georgia, every time I open the damn paper, somebody else who was unjustly convicted, usually a person of color, usually rape or armed robbery, convicted on either eyewitness testimony or testimony from people who swears this was a guy. It turns out because of DNA testing or clear evidence that was not presented at trial that the man was in fact innocent, not guilty, innocent. When you think of the possible number of people in prison in jail tonight because of prosecutorial misconduct, it's staggering. Staggering. It got so bad in Illinois that the guy who was governor when we were there. Another senior moment. George Ryan effectively ended the death penalty because there were something like 26 cases of people sentenced to death who it turned out were innocent. Again, not guilty. Not guilty is a legal term when applied to a criminal case. Innocent is something else again. To the point that Republican Governor George Ryan, who eventually went to prison, is in prison now, not for anything he did as governor, but for what he did as Secretary of State before he became governor. All sorts of fraud and corruption. That's right. It's Illinois. But because Governor Ryan, George Ryan, was made aware of what was going on and how simple it was for prosecutors to investigators, cops, to completely skew the evidence, to lie, to suppress information, to force witnesses to become witnesses, to torture suspects into confessing. Yeah, that happened in Chicago on a regular basis. It was so blatant, so vile, that George Ryan declared a moratorium. And I think there were 170 or 175 people on death row in Illinois when Ryan said, that's it. And I think he commuted all of their sentences to life without parole or life with parole or whatever. But every single one. Now, were there people guilty of what they were convicted of? Of course. But were there people who were innocent of what they were convicted of? Hell yes. We had three of them. Three. On the program that I did in Chicago. Three men who at various times had been on death row, convicted of capital murder, who were in fact innocent and convicted because of prosecutorial misconduct. But in talking with listening to Don Siegelman tonight, it just brings that into sharp focus. How many people sitting in prison are not former governors, are not former attorneys general, are not former connected or white or articulate or have a huge supporting family, who are in fact, they could be white, but for the most part, people of color, poor, unable to mount a defense because they don't understand how they were convicted to begin with. They know they're innocent, but they don't know what to do. You remember, what was it, in the 90s, when these filthy goddamn Republicans decided to pass federal legislation that set a limit on the amount of time available to someone convicted of capital murder in which they could file an appeal, even based on new evidence that would indicate their innocence? What the hell is wrong with Republicans, with conservatives? Are they all sick? Are they all mentally deranged? Are they all just filthy pigs like this Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and on and on? What the hell? How did these people ever come into existence? I've never seen anything like this. There is not a decent conservative or Republican out there. Not one that I'm aware of. It's just almost intolerable. So here's a man who did so much. Well, one of the things that Siegelman did when he was governor, he launched what was called the Alabama Reading Initiative. It was an early education literacy program that got a lot of praise from both Democrats and Republicans and was copied by several other states. He was able to eliminate virtually all portable classrooms in the state's public schools. On and on and on, the good that he did for the state of Alabama and some filthy son of a bitch like Karl Rove comes along and decides to destroy him, destroy his family, destroy his career. You know, when I asked Siegelman, how do you stop yourself from hunting the bastard down and just beating him senseless? And of course, I know what Siegelman's going to answer. Obviously, the man is not violent like I could damn sure be. But that is almost impossible for me to understand. To be victimized like this by just an unconscionable bastard like Karl Rove, who has no more respect for law or justice or this country than pick something out of the air quick, because I can't complete the analogy. Rove is horrifying. I hope. And if I were the least bit inclined to believe in cloud beings, I would pray, which I don't. But I would hope that Karl Rove is found out, that Karl Rove is exposed for what he is, that Karl Rove somehow, some way, has to suffer charges brought against him and a conviction and jail time. I'm so sick of this man. Even after being out of office, you know this bastard is going to surface someplace else. The mischief and evil that he did and continues to do just saturates the system. Or is Karl Rove going to wait until he's on his deathbed, like Lee Atwater did, and then beg for forgiveness? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much these people disgust me? Yeah.
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Bruce writes, political prosecutions were a road to promotion in the Bush crime family. Rove's use of these tactics was not limited to Alabama. The conviction of a Wisconsin state official was done in exactly the same way on the same sort of charges for awarding state contracts to a contributor who made a relatively small donation to the governor. No matter that the contractor had the low bid and resided in the state, the Republicans then trumpeted her conviction and lied about her ties to the governor. The Republicans spent $15 million on a campaign smearing the governor. She, the state official, was like Governor Siegelman and sent immediately to prison in chains right before the election. 4 months later, and after the election, a three-judge panel, two of whom were Republicans, dismissed the case with prejudice immediately, on the spot. After a 45-minute hearing, it is virtually unheard of for a federal appeals court to do this, and the governor was reelected anyway. If the firing of the U.S. attorneys hadn't been exposed by congressional hearings held by the new Democratic majority in 2007, you would have had a flood of these Stalinist show trials. All of the attorneys that were fired were slated to be replaced by Rove underlings. The excuse for doing this was that these toadies were having their resumes enhanced so that they could be appointed to the federal bench. Approve torture memos, and you can skip over district court and write to the appeals bench. Organize a theft of a presidential election in Florida, and you can be Chief Justice. It's very frustrating sometimes, doesn't it? Al is calling from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Hey, Al.
Hi. I wish Siegelman can be vindicated, too. I'm very upset about that. I voted for the man.
Mm-hmm.
But, unfortunately, Harry Reid is high man in the Senate right now. And Mr. Reid, I believe, is facing accusations of having campaign contributions by clients of Jack Abramoff. And I wonder if, to save face, the Obama administration is going to continue the prosecution.
No, I don't think there's any connection there. There are very few members of the House or the Senate, senior members, who didn't have some sort of financial contribution made by someone connected with Jack Abramoff. Abramoff was like an octopus, or an octopus to the fifth power. Abramoff's tentacles went everywhere. And so many of the people, Democrat and Republican, who were who got something, got it in the belief that they were just getting usual contributions, usual money from lobbyists, usual pressure from special interest groups, and didn't realize where it was coming from. And I say that about Republicans as well as Democrats. So no, Al, I don't think there is any connection between what may or may not become Harry Reid's problems and what has happened to Don Siegelman. Siegelman was the victim of prosecutorial misconduct. And I don't think there's any way in hell that the Obama administration is going to do anything other than a version of what they did for Alaska Republican Senator Ted Stevens. And that was after he was convicted. Order everything vacated because of, again, prosecutorial misconduct. So, thanks, Al. I appreciate what you had to say. Victor is calling from Memphis, listening on XM. Hey, Victor.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
You were looking for somebody to complete your sentence about Karl Rove. Well, here you go. You said he doesn't have respect for the law. He doesn't have respect for the United States or the Constitution therein, and I'll complete the sentence for you. And he does not have respect for the individual. And I'll tell you what, I would submit to you that Karl Rove, however, is a genius because his lack for care for the individual has made it easy for him to manipulate people that are not educated, or I should say low-informed voters.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, he's using this tactic all over again, and I'll also submit to you my second theory. The Democrats are so afraid of the Republican Party that they're just letting them do anything. And I'll give you an example of this, if I may. Now, I've been listening to Obama's speeches all last night. I had a theory.
Mm-hmm.
I said in his speeches before the campaign, he said he was talking very fast, very clear. Now, when he speaks, it's like it takes 3 minutes to get through one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
He's so afraid of starting any kind of controversy or abrasing the conservatives that he's choosing his words so carefully, he can't get a job done. And let me just bring this home for the listeners.
Okay, quickly, Vic.
Oh, okay. Well, that was it. I know you're rushed for time, but I'll just stop right there. And,
well, I hear what you're saying, pal, and I hope that you're wrong. And I hope that I'm wrong, because I got the same worries about President Obama. I'm hoping that what he's doing is what I've referred to before as rope-a-dope. I hope. Thanks, Victor. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Did you catch the...
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Cindy writes in, Mike, I knew of Don Siegelman, but hearing it in the interview in his own words was infuriating. I believe in my heart Rove is a Nazi. Not only a Nazi, but he is a fanatic SS filth. He must be tried, convicted, and sentenced in that order. Cindy. And Roz writes, Mike, who gives these men like Rove and Cheney their power? You have to wonder. They're no longer in office. Could it be fear? I know there must be good, upstanding men and women in positions of power who could do something about their meddling. However, they are yet to step up and show themselves. So what or who gives them their power? Seriously. Is everybody totally paralyzed when it comes to the former administration? It's a mystery to me. They must have an impenetrable protective shield surrounding them. Yeah, I'm so sick of these people. When justice delayed, so the saying goes, is justice denied. And I think in example after example, and instance after instance, when the people finally come to realize that justice is not available in their system, that I think is the first sign, that system is on its deathbed. It's going to end either by collapsing from within or being crushed from without. It's not income inequality. It's not poverty. It's not political upheavals. It's when the people realize that justice is no longer available. And I challenge any of you, a lot of you are a hell of a lot smarter than I am, but I challenge you to find for me an example where that is not true. And it doesn't make any difference in most cases what the other factors, they may be mitigating factors where it concerns a breakdown of a society, but once justice becomes something that us common folks see as outside of our reach, unattainable, then the process of ending the government begins. And the ending has numerous ways to be affected. And it's astonishing to me how we are so inured to the idea of, oh, hell, I don't care. Somebody got sentenced, has nothing to do with me. Oh, I don't care. They were accused. They must be guilty. I mean, that of course, is an underlying reason that we have 2 million plus people in this country, the highest number as a percentage of our population, but also the highest raw number of any country on earth, including the Chinese. The Chinese, who have 7 times our population, don't they? What's the population of China? Isn't it 2 billion? Is it not 2 billion? Justice delayed is justice denied. And justice ignored plants the seeds for a complete collapse. Total. The idea of prosecutorial misconduct, whether it's in a municipal court or in front of a county magistrate or a state court or a federal court, it apparently is just rampant in this society. The politicization, did I say it right? Where it concerns the criminal justice system, prosecutors have to run for office in so many places. Judges have to run for office in so many places. The corruption is just absolutely pervasive. It is scary. It is scary. Email here from Mike in St. Paul. This has to do with our top story tonight about this Von Brunn terrorist nutcase who attacked the people inside the Holocaust Memorial Museum in D.C. today. Mike writes, well, Mike, given this Von Brunn terrorist nutcase, we have only one option. We must weed out these maniacs, cleanse them from our society. Anyone with a Germanic-sounding last name who is white, Christian, and over 70... we need to search them at airports, set up roadblocks at state borders to strip search them, put them in jail without trial or representation of any kind. We can find them. We just have to do some serious data mining. Maybe Verizon will help again. If anyone doesn't like it or claims their civil liberties are being violated, they can get the hell out of the greatest country in the world. Of course, this is satire, but you get the point. Now that the group that requires profiling fits the majority race and religion in this country, I'll bet the nuts on the right will now join us in reminding the powers that be that those who sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither. Mike in St. Paul. Steven's calling from Burbank, California. Hey, Steven.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
That last statement, I think it was Ben Franklin, he also said,
right.
Better to let 10 guilty go free than one innocent.
Be hanged, yeah, absolutely.
And my wife was just saying that Bush, they had DNA evidence to prove a guy innocent. Bush turned it down while he was governor of Texas, still got ripped anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
I come face to face with right-wingers every day. And what it is I drive a Ford Ranger, and it's, I'm wondering, did your AM/FM button crap out? I don't know. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
No, mine's going fine.
Yeah, well, I can't get to KTLK during the day, but I get a lot of Pacifica and a little bit of NPR.
Oh, well.
And so I talk to these guys, and I'm telling them about Sarah Palin. I'm telling them about Don Siegelman. When I tell them about Palin, you know, going after this trooper to make his life miserable, they're all,
right.
Oh, what's that got to do with anything, you know?
Right.
And it's getting to the point I have to say, here's what you do. You're on the net. You go Google this.
Mm-hmm.
Moral compass. Just do that. Just Google moral compass. And it's getting to the point now I just have to start asking them, look, you know, we have a situation here. We have vacant housing and homeless children. Explain to me the morality of that situation. And so forth and so on. And
right.
And I argue with them and I fight tooth and nail, and it's it's like they're Brazier calcified. I don't get it. I mean, I have fun with it, you know, because I figuratively kick them in the crotch every single time, but it has no effect. But what it does do, it gets me to thinking about how to combat this, come up with things to do, words to say, you know, something that gets to them personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what about your children? You know, just the other day at work, the guy, well, my son wants to go to St. John's University. It's going to cost $47,000 a year. And I say, well, in the Netherlands, in Denmark, in northern European countries, it's free. And they're, how, what, who, what, well, where? And it goes in one ear, out the other. They forget all about it. They go back to their infantile little toys, you know. They go back to their music that they hear the same song 20 times a day. I think, here's KPFK, here's KTLK. Tune in, listen to these guys. Yum, yammer, yammer, yammer.
Right.
And Mike, I'm telling you, I really try. I got Adam Curtis documentaries. I hand them out to these guys. They don't get it. But there's another one coming up, really neat. KPFK Pacifica is having an economist from Amherst, Massachusetts, economics. I think his name is Richard Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Capitalism Hits the Fan. It's an hour. And I'm getting it. I'm going to make copies. I'm going to give it to them. It's in terms that they can understand. Because trying to get them turned on to Adam Curtis is like trying to, you know, feed porterhouse steak to a sparrow nestling that fell out of the nest, you know.
Right.
And so anyway, do you have any ideas on what I could do about getting that Ranger radio to operate right?
Man, I really don't. But if I come up with something, I'll just put it out over the air. All right, Stephen?
Okay, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. I don't know. I just, I'm feeling kind of more bizarre than usual tonight. How about you, Truth Seeker? If you've been hanging out during most of the program, maybe you feel the same way. I guess the interview with Don Siegelman, to understand how deeply embedded in what remains of our criminal justice system, our legal system, how deeply embedded prosecutorial misconduct is to come to the realization that justice in this country is becoming something that looks good in the textbooks, maybe in law school and in the history books at university or in high school, but in real life, it's starting to disappear. Gang. Ben Birch, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg. All overseen by our executive producer and engineer, Catherine Bay. Back to your calls. Ed is calling from New Mexico. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad. I wanted to address the caller a couple calls back from that drove the Ford Ranger. He said, what can we do
yeah.
to to get our message out.
Right.
I'm a truck driver. I have the same concerns. I hear this all the time. You know, I hear it in truck stops and, you know, I guess my main concern and or my main idea, I guess, would be a better word for them would be just keep talking. You're not going to change the minds of the ones you're talking to in most cases, but there's people listening that are reasonable a lot of times.
Yeah, that's
you know, I've seen it. You know, I've spoken, and you know, and quite frankly, in truck stops, I sometimes think I'm taking my life in my own hands talking about it.
Yeah, really.
But I do, because I can only listen to so much of this crap before I lose my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, every once in a while, I'll see someone sitting in a booth that is listening.
Right.
And that gives me hope, and like I say, just keep talking, because you're not going to change their minds, but there's people listening.
Uh-huh. That's a good point, Ed. It really is. And given the way things are in this country right now, I certainly admire your courage. Take care, okay?
Thank you.
All right, Ed. Appreciate you checking in. Russ is calling from Buffalo, New York, listening to Sirius. Hey, Russ.
Hey, Mike. I'm calling about, you know, the bill that's before the Senate right now, the Graham Lieberman bill?
Yeah, I blogged about that the other day. Right.
Okay, here's my angle on this.
Okay.
I listen to BBC a lot of times in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
One particular program, World Have Your Say, it's on from 1 to 2 Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And I read the blogs. There's a blog section. I go online and go to the same website and listen and read the blogs.
Right.
And there's a lot of news that we do not get in the United States. For instance, the pictures that are involved in that bill were leaked to the Australian media, some media organization in Australia. And people around the world have seen them already. People that know the site and can get there.
Well,
and, my angle is that Graham and Lieberman are saying so that the world won't see them. The world's already seen them. They're keeping them from the American people. Is exactly who they're keeping them from.
Well, I don't see not to doubt you, Russ, but I don't see how that's possible. Once something hits the internet. If that's where they are in the Australian press or wherever, once they hit the internet, that's it. They're everywhere.
Well, it's on the internet someplace. I heard it.
Well, then I wonder though if you're not referring to the pictures that were already released, and those were the ones of Abu Ghraib. There were other photographs. The ones that we're talking about now, the ones that Graham and Lieberman are trying to get suppressed, I think it's a whole different category of photos, and I don't think they have been leaked because they are in the possession of, I believe, the CIA. Some of them may be in the possession of some branch of the military. So, not to get in an argument with you or anything, but I don't think the ones that Lieberman and Graham are trying to keep suppressed are out there anywhere. Because, you know, once they're on the internet, they're everywhere. Except maybe China, you know, because of the, or someplace where access to sites are blocked. Anyway, thanks, Russ. I appreciate you checking in, man. Take care. Dalbert is calling from Needles, California. Hey, Dalbert.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You were talking about Karl Rove and his gang earlier.
Right.
And trying to come up with a comparison to him.
Yeah.
I believe that they are more dangerous to this nation in the long run than any of the terrorists.
Oh, I completely agree. Absolutely. They are terrorists for what they're doing. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I follow the Siegelman case quite a bit. Tom Hartman hits on it every little bit, and it just infuriates me what they've done to Mr. Siegelman, and the fact that they're able to do it to him. So.
Yeah.
That's all I had, Mike.
All right.
I love your show. You're my company every night on the road.
Well, thanks, Delbert. Take care, okay?
Uh-huh. Good night.
All right. Appreciate you checking in. We are out of time, right? If you're on hold, I'm sorry. We did not get to you tonight. And we do have to boogie because the phone company disconnects all our phones at midnight Eastern time. More or less. One of my listeners here who uses a number instead of a name, he says, hatred is all-consuming. That's what the right-wing radio has been putting out on the airwaves. Look at Reagan's speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Yeah, remember when Reagan launched his re-election campaign, or was it his election campaign? And he went to Philadelphia, Mississippi, where the three young civil rights workers, two white, one black, two Jewish, and one Christian, were murdered. And the sheriff and the deputies and the people that went on trial for that murder just sat there and smirked and chewed their red man tobacco and more or less gave the finger to America. And Reagan, that's where Reagan went to say, hey, I'm going to be your next president. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.